So there's a lady named Sue Bolin. Some of you may be familiar with her. She is a Watermark, wonderful Watermark member in Plano, and she does a ton of talks on this issue. So if you want a real long, full version, go listen to her talk on The Nest. I actually got to sit with her for a couple hours and just soak up her wisdom, and she was like, please tell the women of Fort Worth this stuff. So just consider me Sue. I'm her mouthpiece. I'm giving you guys this information. So when I teach, I learn, okay? So I want to be armed with truth and information that will help me raise secure women in a confused generation. Okay, so there we go. Let's start at the beginning. In the beginning, Genesis, God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them. If we skip down to verse 31, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Love that. I love that God saw what he made and he called it good. God can make something exactly how he wants to make it in one try, right? He didn't look at Adam and go, I don't know about that, or maybe if I tweaked that a little bit, right? No, there is no need for a do-over with God. When I put together a flower arrangement, I rarely call it good, okay? If given no time restraints, I could fiddle with it for a real long time and play with it and just go, God, what's wrong with this? And then finally just throw my hands up and say, well, next time. Okay, I'll get it later. So God made man in his own image. He looked at Adam and said, this is good. You know who else is good? God is. God. Psalm 107, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Mark 10, why do you call me good? Jesus said, no one is good except God alone. So key thing here, early on with our kids, this is where we start connecting those dots. God is good, right? So if God is good, then what he made is good. You, he made you. You are great. You are perfect. His way is perfect, Psalm 18:30 says. This will facilitate self-acceptance with our kids young, at an early age, by teaching them a good God has made them exactly the way they should be. Because God's plan is perfect, they can be unapologetically confident in who they are. This is essential. My parents did a great job at this. They raised me to be secure in who I was, not trying to be someone else, not wishing I was someone else, because God made me exactly how he wanted to make me. When we help kids understand that they're being a boy or they're being a girl is an intrinsic part of how God made them, that was his plan for them, this results in healthy self-esteem. This lays a solid foundation for their gender esteem that can eliminate a lot of struggles with this issue later on. Okay, so here's where it can get kind of fun. This is the gender spectrum. This is a tool for us just to inform us to use with our kiddos. And also, free tip, it works for marriages too. You'll see why. Sue Bolin came up with this concept. And I know she's shared it with thousands of women, but you guys, it's so fascinating. And I really have enjoyed learning from it. So if we were to Google gender spectrum, which I did, by the way, what would pop up? Any guesses? So one spectrum, female on one end, male on the other, right? Is that what? Yeah, that's what we see. Toss it. That idea is incorrect, okay? So again, we have to go back to Genesis 1. God says clearly, I have created male and I have created female. So two spectrums. It's kind of a dumb moment, but that's what we have, two spectrums. We have the masculine spectrum and we have the feminine one. So let's talk about the masculine spectrum. On one end of this spectrum, we have what's called the rough and tumble boys. Some of you may have heard of this phrase. These guys, these boys come out of the womb throwing a football, practically, okay? They cannot get enough movement. They make weird boy noises. They are action-oriented. They are a little bit emotionally clueless. They need games, competition. They want to be outside. We have a good picture of these kind of boys, right? On the other end of the spectrum, we have the sensitive, the creative boy. This is the child who is constantly observant. He is very understanding of people's feelings. He's compassionate. He is aware of what's going on. So because of that, he's interested in art, music, reading, cooking. If you have a little boy like this, and maybe he loves sparkly things or pink and purple, please don't think you have a little gay boy on your hands. You have a boy who thinks that little boy colors like gray, black, brown are probably a little bit boring, right? Which apparently God thought too when he created the sunset. So this has nothing to do with homosexuality and everything to do with God creating a little boy who knows how to appreciate beauty. These sensitive, creative boys compose about 5 to 20% of men. And when these boys are encouraged in their type of masculinity, they grow up to be great men, the most wonderful husbands, teachers, counselors, artists, men who will come into your home and make a beautiful work of interior design, right? But they are secure in their masculinity. A great biblical example of this is Jacob and Esau. Esau, on one hand, he loves to hunt, be outside. He is very intense in the way he communicates. And then we have Jacob, who liked to hang with his mom in the kitchen. He was more sensitive, right? Obviously not interested in hunting. And I have two brothers too, and this is very true for them as well. One of them, Brady, he lives on a boat. He's pretty much old man in the sea. Every day is a new adventure. He's a little bit more inward with his emotions. And then my other brother, Barrett, he's an artist. He's a musician. He writes words for a living. He's very sensitive and compassionate. So wherever our kids, our boys, fall on this spectrum, it is completely of God and out of our control, right? It is a good thing. Children are a package that we get to unwrap and discover. So for the femininity spectrum, on one end we have the girly girl, right? Everything is pink, probably. Involves twirling dresses, pretty nails, fairy wands. If you're in my house, I feel like I live in a musical, and the musical is Frozen, because that's what's happening all day long. Everything is probably a little bit more dramatic. Maybe the feelings are a little bit more intense, right? And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the tomboy spectrum. Athletes, girls that are allergic to dresses, don't love pink, don't want to wear makeup, love playing outside with the boys getting dirty, okay? Maybe their emotions are a little bit more cut and dry. Again, all of these, no matter where your little girl lands on this spectrum, it's great. It's perfect. It's exactly how God made her. Okay, so briefly, I want to talk through some of the gender differences between boys and girls, okay? And I love them. They're awesome. God made them. They're precious. And we could spend so much time talking about these differences. So hopefully I've kind of consolidated them into some easy lists. Granted, it's not all of them. But my goal here is to help us understand why our kids act the way they do and how we can help and love them exactly as they're made. Obviously, this is big picture painting with a super broad brush, okay? There's going to be exceptions with every bell curve, so know that. But on the whole, these are some generalities. Boys tend to get their sense of self from achievement. Girls tend to get their sense of self from relationships. So when our husbands, we know this, right, refuse to ask for help with directions, it's because they were created to be self-reliant. Interesting. Thank God for GPS on phones now. God made Eve to be a helpmate to Adam. So as women, our tendency is we want to help. We want to nurture. We want to problem solve, right? So oftentimes when you pair self-reliant, I can do it myself, little boys, with, oh, I just want to help you, mothers, there can be some frustration that results. That comes about. And unknowingly, as moms, we can communicate to them, you can't do this without me, right? Or I just don't have confidence in you, okay? So tip of the day, stop offering help to your sons. This will make a huge difference in their being respected and honored. Let them try. Set the bar high that they can do it. And then if they start getting to the point where they're a little frustrated or a little that kind of uh-oh feeling, you know, you just say, okay, now help. Now ask for help. I'm here to help you. This will honor their design as males. Boys tend to be independent. Girls tend to be interdependent. So the secret to getting most girls to do something is to have someone do it with them, right? Groups, committees, women go to the bathroom together. With Sailor, my little girl, it's really funny. It cracks me up every time. I will say, Sailor, can you please pick up these blocks over here? And then thinking that I'm helping her, I say, I'll pick up your books for you while you pick up the blocks. And every single time she'll go, Mom, let's just pick up the blocks together. And I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to clean the house. But no, she wants to do it together. Boys are not that way. If for a boy to ask or accept help, he senses that as weakness, right? Whereas girls, they feel honored to be included in that. So again, honor the way that God made your kids. Boys tend to be competitive. Girls tend to be cooperative. Boys, most of them, all of them almost, have a ton of testosterone. Again, that varies. That is not to say there's no such thing as a competitive girl. I am one, right? If you've got one, use it to your advantage. But for a boy, almost everything can be turned into a contest, okay? They can be spurred on and sharpened with competition. Boys tend to be analytical. Girls tend to be intuitive. Yes, good one, good one. Boys tend to be compartmentalized. Girls tend to be multitaskers. So this is a good one for the marriage. Here's a great example. The men's brain, how men think. Envision a chest of drawers in their head as a brain. So when they are thinking about work, they will pull out the drawer labeled work. And when they are done, they will shut that drawer. When they are thinking about you, they will pull out the marriage wife drawer. Okay, yes, let's talk about you. And then when they're done, they will close it. And literally, they will have a nothing drawer because my husband has one and he confirmed this is true. He will think about nothing, which shocks me. And then he will close that drawer when he thinks of something again. So, but us women, no, everything is connected. We're here, we're there. It's all wound up in a tight little tangle, probably, in my mind. And most men and boys simply cannot understand the universe of a multitasker, okay? Most of us, we're created that way. We're moms. We can unload the dishwasher and talk on the phone. We can cook dinner and direct house cleanup at the same time, right? That's why God made us that way. Boys, they tend to be action-oriented. Girls tend to be verbal-oriented. Boys tend to bond shoulder to shoulder. Girls tend to bond face to face. So, in other words, most boys bond doing something, right? Just hanging out, doing something together. And girls, we need to be face to face. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about something fun and meaningful. With all of these differences, we've got to remember God's words about his son. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. And these are great words. We must communicate this to our kids over and over again. You are beloved, and we are well pleased with you. Okay, how boys and girls receive love. So no matter where they fall on the masculine, feminine spectrums, right, all kids, all genders, boy and girl, need three things with love. The three A's: attention, affection, and affirmation. Attention really translates into time together, okay? Side note, this is very interesting to me. If you have a very rough and tumble boy, like I said, he will bond shoulder to shoulder doing something. So the dad could even say, hey, let's run to Home Depot, come with me. And the boy would be like, yes, I love that, okay? But if the artistic, sensitive boy, he will feel love face to face. So that is a difference between the two boys. So with conversation, talking through ideas, discussing a book, whatever. So if you happen to have, because most men are on the rough and tumble side of spectrums, if you have a rough and tumble dad, and he is trying to love an artistic, sensitive boy through shoulder to shoulder time, there's going to be a miss there. It will feel like the dad speaks Chinese and the boy speaks Spanish, okay? Because that's not how the boy feels loved or receives loved. This can be a big miss in men's lives who struggle with same-sex attraction. They never felt loved by their dad, even though maybe he tried, but their mother loved them in a face-to-face way because that's how we love as women, right? So key here, it is up to the dad and also the mom, but mostly the dad, to understand how his son gives and receives love and love him in that way. Affection translates into healthy physical touch, hugs, roughhousing, wrestling with dad, all those things that physically communicate love that are healthy and super important. Affirmation, this is emotional support and encouragement, mostly verbal, right? So encouraging who your child is becoming, encouraging them through something that is difficult, telling them how proud you are of them about good choices that they've made. Whatever it is, this is, again, integral to them feeling loved. I love 1 John 4. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. So ultimately, we love our kids because we are modeling God's love to them, right? This is the gospel in action. Only God will love perfectly, but through the gifts of his children, we get to love them as deeply as we can. The way our kids feel loved is incredibly tied to their gender security, okay? I cannot underscore enough how when a child does not feel like they are connecting with you, connecting with a parent, maybe they don't feel affirmed, maybe there's not enough time together, there's no affection, whether you're a boy or a girl, the temptation will be as they grow up that they will look for that love in other places, right? And often it will be a super shallow representation of what they should have been getting from their parents. This can cause a lot of hurt and a lot of pain. So, man, this is where our job is super important as parents. There's a website, livehope.org. I think it's on your handouts. It is a great place for resources, and there's a ton of testimonies as well about kids who didn't feel loved and what happened. Thankfully, most of the stories end well, but it's just really eye-opening. Okay, so moms, are we ready? Can we take our hands off our ears? Can we face this battle? Because it's important. Let's go to war for our kids, okay? With God's help, may we raise beautifully confident children, secure that their identity is in Christ, right? Let's do it. Thank you, ladies. Have a great morning.
Excuse me, right? Thank you so much, Brenna. You guys, over a year ago when I started talking about starting the nest, Brenna and I had a conversation and she had told me how the Lord had pressed this topic on her heart. And I am just so thankful for her and just the time that she has studied under Sue Bolin, who is just a real expert in this topic. I'm just grateful for her gift. I can totally relate to when she says you want to just, when you hear all of the things around this topic that are going on in our culture that you want to cover your ears and just sing really loudly and hope it goes away. But I'm so thankful for her and just the light that she brings and the biblical perspective on helping us help our kids understand their true identity in the Lord. So thank you so much, Brenna, for all of the work and time you have put into really studying and being an expert in this topic. I'm really, really thankful for you. Also on your reference sheet, Sue Bolin has given a much expanded version of this talk that you can reference. It was a 2012 Nest talk, and there's instructions on how you can access that from the Watermark website if you're interested in hearing more on that. So thank you again, Brenna. I have just the great privilege of introducing to you our next speaker, Jeannie Cox. She comes to us from the Dallas campus. I cannot say she attends the Dallas campus. She serves the Lord wholeheartedly at the Dallas campus. She is just a dear, dear woman, and it's been my joy to get to know her. Jeannie has been married to her husband, John, for 20 years. They have 5 children, 4 girls and 1 boy, between the ages of 17 and 11. 5 kids in 6 years. I was looking at the mouth. I'm like, you are just amazing to me. She is just a delight to listen to. I will tell you guys this. The word of the Lord is written so ingrained in her heart that it just bubbles and overflows in the words that she says. She is so gentle, genuine, and straightforward. And I just am pray and know that the words that she speaks to you are going to give you confidence to take on this very holy responsibility of teaching our kids about God's design for sex. So, Jeannie, we are so happy to have you. Come on up.
What a sweet introduction. I will have to say that's called lack of exposure, because when somebody says all those things about me, about the gentleness and kindness and respect, my kids would go 24 hours. I'll just give you 24 hours. And you might change your opinion. This topic was introduced to me 17 years ago. Just my oldest is about to turn 18. She was one. Our community group in Dallas had the privilege of going to Northwest Bible and hearing Mary Flo Ridley talk. She gave us a blank sheet of paper and said, this conversation will come sooner than you think. And that was all it was at the top. And she downloaded a little snippet. I'm going to share with you a little snippet of what she shared with us during that hour and a half. And I just want you to sit back, relax. This is not a one-time conversation that you have with a child at 13. This is an ongoing, progressive dialogue that you have with your child from the time they start to talk. Because, ladies, if you don't, the world will. Okay? Just like what our sweet Bryn just shared with us about all the gender spectrum, the world wants to educate our children. And God has made that so tangible and so available and so every day for us within the context of the kitchen, the context of giving them a bath, and the context of nature, and the context of what they see with your relationship with your husband. We just came through the book Cherish this last month, and it has Gary Thomas continues to kick my tail. I come out of his books going, I hate you. I'm never going to read another book that you wrote because they're so deeply convicting. And then I see the fruit of the truth of his words. This is not outside your reach. It says in Scripture, what I teach you today is not too hard for you. It's not too difficult. It's just that a lot of us don't have the vocab for this, and we don't have the model for that. And today, we're going to take that myth down, okay? And it's only going to take about 25 minutes, okay? Here we go. I love to give you ladies tips of the day. When we started A Mother's Heart at PCPC, when I was first a mom, a lady would always stand up and give something very practical. And because she gave us something very practical, then we were prone to listen to her from later on. And Joey is sitting back there beside my book bag, which I've had since my oldest was born. And I encourage you to have a book bag or a little crate, a little bin, and within it, pick books of the month. Go to the library, pick your older mom's friends' brains, and pick a theme of the month. And given the harvest, I encourage you guys to make the theme, at least for this next month, seeds. Because we're talking about seeds of truth that we sow diligently and evidently every day in their hearts, so that when it comes to bear fruit, you have the first impression. You're the expert. You're the one they heard it from first. There's a principle in psychology called recency. The first thing they hear is what they will remember and what they weigh everything else against. So what you teach them about the knowledge of God, about their bodies, about sex, everything else they hear will weigh up against that. The parents that choose to wait until they're 12 and 13, unbeknownst to them, like it or not, somebody in the world, in the magazine rack at Walmart, something they saw on TV, has introduced a concept of sex and their bodies to them that is not God's best. That's our job. That's what we start doing from the time they start talking. So we love to have little book bags. I still have a book bin beside my fireplace at home. And within it are books that I hope to get to over the course of the month. Mom Jill Chestnut taught us kind of a 20-20-20 model, where if you spend 20 minutes a day reading with your child, definitely the story you're going through, starting blocks here from the Bible, and then 20 minutes, you know, reading other little books, Boynton books, you know, Seeds books is a great book. There's a baby animals book. Anything you find about baby animals will lead to conversations about this. And the reason after this talk you're going to understand why seeds is because the definition that Mary Flo taught us that night is inside every living creature, God put the material to make another creature just like it. So you go into your kitchen and you cut open a pepper. Every time you cut up fruit for them every day, help them find the seed and say, girl, boy, look at this. Inside every living creature, God put the material to make another creature just like it. And does this strawberry, if I plant these seeds, will it grow a watermelon? No. Will it grow an orangutan? No. It will grow a strawberry. And God put those same seeds inside you. And you introduce the topic. You answer the question before they ask, so that then that leads them to know that mom knows and God designed it and he created it and it's inside every living creature. Those are little definitions you introduce in the kitchen. So I don't cut open a pepper. I don't cut open an apple without holding it up and showing to them. And now they start to mock me. And when your kids start to mock you, that means they've really learned what you want to say, because then they finish your sentences before you do. Yes, mom, inside every living creature is material to make another creature just like it. Thanks. And then you go, okay, you've owned that, you've got it, and that's okay. You know, they need to hear that over and over again, because the world tells us, just what we just heard, that we can morph that design. And God has intrinsically, it said this week, if you're doing BSF, we studied that God has given each one of us gifts. He's made each one of us. And in Genesis 1, where we want to start, he said he gave us an admonition. I just came through with Kathy McJunkin, one of the best studies I've ever done. It's called The Five Aspects of Woman. I highly encourage you to do it as a young mom. You will train your mind to think rightly about your relationship to God, your relationship to your husband, and your relationship to your world. And it goes through Genesis 1, 2, and 3. Then it goes through Proverbs, Lady of Wisdom, and it goes through Glory of Man. When we, as the church, represent what Christ's relationship is to us in our relationship to our husband. And that's a heavy weight, but it is so good to see that the way I love my husband empowers him to be the man that he's called to be. Well, the first one, mistress of her domain, God gave Eve a garden. He's given you a home. You're here because God has entrusted you with a husband and children to grow. And that's why we're committed to our harvest. The seeds we sow now will reap fruit later on. When you understand that God's design for you is he created male and female. Memorize that verse. In the beginning, God made them male and female. He made them in the image of God. It's both and. We are the height of God's creation. We're the last thing he made, and we're created to be a helper suitable, which is the second role that she unpacks. The Barbara Mauser study is over the top great. When you get some brain space, do it. It's so good. But we want to be fruitful. We want to multiply, and we want to subdue. So we want to subdue our children into understanding what Scripture tells them about themselves. Eve have a garden. You have a kitchen. You have a bathtub. You have a pool. You have nature. You have a backyard. You have parks somewhere around you if you're in an apartment. I want to survey you really quick. If I were to ask you to write down a 5-ingredient recipe that you could send your husband to the store right now because you just learned that Gary and Kim are coming over for dinner, or Patrick and Joy, and you could send him to the store, get these 5 things, and you could put it on the table. How many of you have that recipe in your head? Raise your hand. Okay. How many of you were taught by your mom and dad to cook? Our mom, grandma, dad. How many of you came into marriage knowing nothing about cooking? The best you knew was takeout and eatsies. Thank you. We all come from very different backgrounds. Some of our homes really taught us about our bodies and about sex and about God's design. Most did not. Mine did not. I found out what I found out from Harlequin romance novels, the magazines that I read, and the locker room. My mom, it was a non-conversation, and what I saw on TV, and I watched a lot of TV. Up until 6th grade, I thought you could get pregnant by being kissed right here on the neck. Because that's what happened. At that point in time, that's where they cut it off. People will start making out, and then before you know it, she's pregnant. Soap opera version. And now they can basically get a whole education. But back in the day, they could not. All of us come into marriage with a bag of tricks, things that our mom and dads taught us, and then neglect, things that our mom and dads did not teach us. Or our families of origin might have taught us such a perverted version of it that it's never something we would want to emulate. We want this conversation to become so second nature that it's natural. Do you guys know what an elevator conversation is? If you were to get in the elevator with someone and they were to see your Watermark t-shirt and go, "What's Watermark?" You would want to be able to stand and deliver. You would want a 20 to 30 second answer that hopefully would whet their appetite for more. But you could say, "Hey, this is where I go to church. This is where I worship. It's a bunch of fully devoted followers of Christ who are just running hard after Jesus. I'd love for you to come see what that's about." You want to have a stand and deliver. Your kid in the grocery store line beside people you don't know or might be embarrassed in front of your in-laws is going to ask you, "Mom, what's a penis? Mom, you know, where do babies come from?" And you want to have answers. What is sex? They're going to start reading. They're going to go down the tabloid line when you're standing in line at the grocery store, and they're going to start reading about orgasms. They're going to start reading about, you know, hot. They're going to start reading about sexy, and you're going to have to unpack that vocab with them. But because of what we're talking about today and the conversation you're starting, they will already have a base for it, and it will be second nature to you to go, hey, is that the way God designed a woman to look? No. Let me tell you about how God designed a woman to look. For the benefit of every mom and everybody standing around you, you will be comfortable in your own skin, comfortable in your vocabulary, comfortable in your story to tell. Now, I want, again, it's an ongoing conversation. It's an everyday conversation. You want to start this conversation when they start talking to you. If you want to know when and check that off your list, now. You want it to be vocabulary because you know what, girls? We need to practice. We need to get comfortable saying the real words, vagina, penis, orgasm, sex, you know, labor and delivery, all those terminology. You want to practice those. And what Mary Flo told us that night that was so true, start practicing asking your husband questions and letting him ask you questions. Well, what are we going to say? Because it's a we conversation, not a me conversation. A lot of dads will abdicate and put this off on moms, especially with girls. And one of the saddest stories we saw in Foundation Group when we did our first or second foundation group, I think this was the second. This girl came from a family of all girls, and her mom had done an incredible job about talking about this stuff with her, and she knew the anatomy, she knew the right terminology. Her dad had never had one conversation with her about sex. So when her husband approached her to talk about, what do you think about it, what do you like, she was like a doe in the headlights. She was pure when she got married. She had never talked about sex with a man. And it was so uncomfortable. And so you want to teach them appropriate conversation both with mom and dad. Don't let this just be your gig. It needs to be dad gig. So John and I started asking each other questions. What are we going to, not going to call it a hoo-hoo, not going to call it a jai-jai, we're going to call it a vagina. And we're going to practice saying this word. And for John, who came from a family of all boys, that was very hard. Very hard. But you need to practice that vocabulary out loud. And the neat thing is, we do vocab a lot at our school, and they do through high school, but they learn 20 words a week. But the truth is, they learn 100 because you learn the synonyms and the antonyms. And so the world wants to make you think that, them think that because you don't use the appropriate words, you don't really know. And that's one of the biggest first plugs that Planned Parenting would do is, hey, what'd your parents teach you to call this? A pee-pee? A wee-wee, a whatever? No, it's a penis. Can you guys say penis? They're too scared to talk about the real thing with you. Let me tell you about how it works. And immediately, they have discredited the mom and dad and have slipped themselves into the point of authority. That's what you want to dispel. You want to know what the conversation is. Now, while we don't, and I just want to make a plug here for Shelter from the Storm, plug here for Regen, plug here for Shiloh, anything you need to go through recovery-wise. There is a lot of shame and guilt that a lot of us carry into. We've already talked about having no model. Well, some of us had a really perverted model. And some of us experienced, like me, wanting to get so much of my identity from boys that I would use my body as a tool to get them to want to be in a relationship with me because I so long to belong. And so you've got to be comfortable in your own story. Come to grips with your experience of sex, how it came about. Be comfortable talking about it. Have that dialogue with your husband. Have that dialogue, you know, with your children. You will be asked. They will, sooner than you think, they will ask you, well, Mom, when's the first time you had sex? You better know how you're going to answer that question and have a good handle with your husband. No shame, no guilt, no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. We are clean. And my kids, the first time it came down my pipe, all of my three older girls were in elementary school, and we were talking about two mommies that were living together and had a baby. And they started applying all the knowledge they had. How does that math work? How'd that baby get here? Well, they had an implant, and they, you know, it actually is her seed, you know, her egg, but it's not, there's no seed involved. The seed had to come from another man. So one, you know, we're unpacking that. Is that the way God designed it? No. That's why they had to go outside the context of marriage to get it, blah, blah, blah. And my oldest just looks straight at me and goes, well, when did you first have sex? And I'm standing there at the sink. You know, they're all in their little jumpers. And that's the first time she had put it to me that way. We had talked a lot about sex and a lot about the technological part of it, but she had never made it personal to me. And she was like third grade, and then I had first in kindergarten, because Emily Jane was still in a jumper. I can still see him as clear as day. And so then the Lord kind of goes, okay, here's your stand and deliver time. For my story in my third grader's mind, she knew bits and pieces, but for it to come together. And she needed to know that I was loved, I was forgiven, I was chosen. I fell away, ran away prodigal into this relationship, and the Lord brought me back, and that's how I understood grace. And if I had not been ready, and I had put her off, which I could have done, each of you may encounter it and you go, hey, let's talk about that later. Answer the question they ask. I didn't go into the full-blown detail, but I told her enough that day that she knew. And then you always close. Mary Flo taught us this with, thank you so much for asking me. I want you to know God's design for this. And I want you to know that I am an open book and you can always come to me and ask questions. And you and your husband decide what you're comfortable with. There is no right and wrong. Between what you decide as a couple, your mission statement about what you're going to teach them. Mary Flo teaches us sex is God's greatest gift inside marriage, but it has a context. And just like fire or anything else that you would take outside the context, it will burn you outside the context. The ocean is great and wonderful, and many of you may be headed there for spring break or this summer, but a tsunami is not. And so outside the context of the boundaries God has designed, you can be harmed. It can be deadly for you. I want you to know Romans 1 teaches us so clearly, and we're reading through Romans in the journey this year. If we neglect, we are exchanging the truth for a lie, and the world will come in. And what does it say? It says they traded the truth about God for a lie so that they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. And in Colossians 4:3-6, it says, speak to them in such a way that they will want to listen to you. Do not let your talk be foolish. Know how to give the right answer to everyone, to anyone who asks. First and foremost, your children. Okay? When they exchange the truth for the lie, what is the relationship that got perverted most of all? Sex. They exchanged natural relations that God had designed for unnatural relations. Men lusted after men. Women lusted after women. You see the perversion. And when we as the body don't speak the truth to them early and well and often and comfortable in that story, that that's God's greatest gift inside marriage, and he means us to use that to be fruitful and multiply and build his church and his kingdom, it's a physical representation of a spiritual reality. Because girls, when the Spirit comes into your heart and he fills you like a man fills you when you're making love, there is procreation and there's recreation. It's enjoyable. It's pleasurable. It's good. Let them know that about your relationship with your husband. Let them see that you cherish him and you want time with him and you long for him. And that relationship is fruitful. It is satisfying. And you make babies. God said, go and make disciples of all nations. So even the single women in your life, when they are filled with his Spirit and empowered through his word, they go out and make disciples. It's a physical representation of a spiritual reality. So intercourse with the Lord, when his Spirit and his word fill your heart, is fruitful. And you multiply and you subdue the things that we need to control and say no to. And you bring to life the things that build his kingdom. That's how good you want them to know it is. And how nothing is wasted in God's economy. Sex is not off to itself just as a way to fill the earth. It's a way God reveals what worship looks like. And passivity or neglect, when you withhold discipline, training of your child's mind by this, you lead their soul to death because the world will have them exchange his image for the way it's not supposed to look. So many of you use sponges to clean. My favorite these days is this little happy sponge that you can get at Bed Bath & Beyond. And it scrubs on one side and it's soft on the other when you wet it, and it really does the gig. But I want you to know, this is another tip you can use, a lot of you heading into summer. Before you go to, your hair is like a sponge. It soaks up water. That's why it's heavier when it's wet. Before you go to the pool, wet your child's head, even if it's just in the shower at the pool, and put some leave-in conditioner in it. Because then it won't soak up the chlorine and get all gnarly and nappy and green. Okay, somebody told me that early, and I especially have one that's a curly-headed girl who's a fish. And she loves to swim, and her hair would get all crazy. And when I learned to do that, to wet her head first so that it was soaked full of water and then put conditioner on it, it protected it. And then she didn't come out all gnarly. And then when you get home and they wash their hair, it's a lot easier to brush. Because water, hair full of chlorine is not very easy to get untangled, no matter how much conditioner you use. You saturate it first. So I want you to think about a sponge, and I want you guys to go get one of those happy sponges at Bed Bath & Beyond or order them off Amazon, find them, and keep it, and realize you're happy to fill their hearts with the good things first so that when the world comes along and wants to teach them their own, its own way, they'll be saturated. With a saturated sponge, it doesn't soak up a lot when it's full. And every day, because the water seeps out, we're broken vessels, right? And our hearts are broken vessels. The truth will seep out, and we have to refill it with living water. So the dialogue box is kind of the the way we want to be the dialogue. We want to be the owner of the expert. And the expert, we want to have the conversations. The sponge is that image of your child's heart and mind, and you want to fill it. Our next is you don't want to wait. Some people do. I have lots of friends within Watermark who put off the conversation as long as possible. This is not right and wrong. Methods are many, principles are few. Methods always change, principles never do. That's for Robert Clinton, The Making of a Leader. I learned that quote when I was 20. There are solid pastors on our staff who do not have this conversation until their kids are 13, 14 years old. We believe in our family, you want to start the conversation and tell them what's right before you start to tell them what's wrong. Because by the time they reach 12 and 13 and 14 years old, you're almost as concerned with the preventative defensive posture as you're concerned with the offensive posture. This conversation is not sexual to a child before they hit puberty. It's not. It's technical. It's vocab. It's basic science and biology. It's how you cook. It's the recipes you use. That's the recipe God uses to make babies. It's that simple. If we're uncomfortable in it, they're going to be uncomfortable in it. If we're secure in it, they're going to be secure in it. And then when the kindergartner, who your oldest encounters the fifth of five, and that five-year-old starts educating your child's already going to have a base. So by the time they can read, you want them knowing this stuff. And we've listed out on the back your resource, so many resources. Before you were born, get out your what to expect when you're expecting as you deliver. Show them the pictures. Show them that it's God's anatomy, not Gray's anatomy. Okay? You want them to have your version and God's version of how this stuff works. So what do we tell them and when? I've dripped a little bit of that in there. Deuteronomy 6. I'm just going to read the verbs from this passage. Commit, repeat, talk, tie, wear, write. This is wash, rinse, repeat. As often as you give your child a bath, as often as you walk along the road to the park, as often as you cut up stuff and cook up stuff for dinner, have these conversations daily. It's a drip, 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 not a fire hydrant model. One of the best things that Dennis Rainey ever gave me as a tool is to ask them, scratch their back, snuggle them at bedtime, ask them three questions at bedtime. You've got three questions to ask mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy have three questions to ask you. And one of them always needs to be, did you learn any new words today? What new words did you learn today? Did somebody say something that was really funny? Did somebody say any icky words to you today? Did somebody say some nice words to you today? Talk about vocab. A lot will come out with that question. And subsequent to that is the whole conversation of, did mommy hurt your heart today? Did anybody hurt your heart today? And then you can talk about regrets and resentments, which that's a whole nother talk on taking inventory. But you teach them to inventory daily, and they sort through what is good, what is pure, what is lovely, what's excellent, and what's the throw off. And that's how you can head off a lot of the vocabulary. It is a constant conversation when they're little, basic biology, vocab, core beliefs, definitions. And you want to always close the conversation with, isn't God great? Isn't he so creative? It is God's design that he made us that way. Now, I'm going to do a little sidestep here and want to tell you, back to Genesis 1, God gave Adam the role of doing what to the animals? Naming them. Naming implies authority. When you name body parts, when you name vegetables, when you name the type of cars driving down the road, it implies that you know what you're talking about. Now, I don't know many makes and models of cars, so my one son does not believe I'm the resident expert on automobiles because I don't have my vocabulary straight. I don't know my makes and models. You got to know your makes and models, and you will become the expert when they're little. Naming implies authority. Use appropriate vocabulary. Call your body parts what they are. Colossians 4:6 says, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you will know how to answer everyone appropriately, is one of the translations. You want to have the appropriate answer, the right answer at the right time. Now, the first conversation you want is about what's right, not what's wrong. That's why we don't wait. Mary Flo has now gone second generation. She has handed off her ministry of Sooner Than You Think to Megan Michelson, who I have the privilege and honor of walking with as a young mom at PCPC. Now it's called The Birds and the Bees, Oh Help Me Please. And she has re-recorded it and relisted it. You can buy it for your community group. You can buy it for your church. You can buy it for your just yourself individually online and listen to it with your husband. And I just wanted you to take a deep breath and know this is a not by myself thing. Listen to this material a little bit at a time. They do it in like little TED Talk sound bites. Talk about it with your community group and with your best friends so that you're on the same team. This is a team thing. Because just like we aren't the only person who will disciple our kids. And to this point, when I was little, I had never seen a boy's penis. And I was raised with my sister, but my brothers were 12 and 14 years older. And my dad was a very modest guy, and it just wasn't showing it on TV at the time. And so I didn't know what it was. And so I was taking a bath with my cousin and my sister, and he had a penis. And so I look at my Aunt Rhea, and I go, what's that? And she goes, Jeannie, I can still see her to this day, gets down on her hands and knees. Isn't that incredible? A boy has a penis, and you don't have one. You have a vagina. And even she was so far ahead of her time. I mean, this is when I was like 3 and 4 years old. I still remember this conversation because it was just so novel. The first time you see something, it's so new. And she was so cool about it. And she didn't go into any big detail, but I remember being so safe with her and so... She was so winsome about it. To this day, I can ask my Aunt Rhea anything I want, and she will tell me the truth. And she's always told me the truth. And I just love that about her. So be the first. You want to have a mission statement with your husband. Now, I'm borrowing all this stuff from Sooner Than You Think and Birds and Bees. You want to come up with a mission statement. What do you believe about sex? John and I, we put no time into this at all. Mary Flo's definition was good to go. Sex is God's greatest gift inside marriage. And she doesn't say greatest gift. John and I say greatest gift. But that's our morph. We love that, and we love all that it represents. You need to understand and talk through basic definitions in biology with your community group, with your people. And you need... to know that right now, especially with many of you being pregnant, your littles are more concerned with how they get out than how they get in. So you almost start with the end in mind and use that vocabulary, talk about it, and they will really be real concerned as you grow. How's that baby going to get out? And tell them, walk them through, use that what to expect when you're expecting. Another thing you need to use is nature. So that's why you want to know that, especially with springtime coming around and birds and bees and seeds, use that as a springboard into the conversations and initiate those conversations. I taught a course called Child Lures when I was at Highland Park Presbyterian Church, and it was wonderful. And it taught children how some people who are sunny can sometimes turn stormy. Oftentimes it's not the people that you don't know, it's the people that you know that take advantage of you, and that's been true for many of us. And so teach them appropriate touch. Teach them that anything inside a swimsuit, therefore a swimsuit should be modest, ladies, is off limits. And ask them often, hey, has anybody made you feel just kind of yucky lately? I mean, have you gotten that? We call it the heebie-jeebies in our house. You want to teach them to listen to that gut feeling of, yeah, sometimes when I'm around that uncle, I just kind of feel, ugh, I don't like the way he looks at me. And then don't poo-poo that. I'm not saying you have to call CPS, but just go, how does he make you feel? What is that? Teach them to listen to their bodies. And the scary thing about it is I discovered when I was a little girl and my girls discovered, it is pleasurable. I've caught my little girls at the spigot at the pool, just up against the wall, just kind of standing there shooting the breeze with people. It's because that water spigot is hitting their clitoris and it feels awfully good from a young age. That's pleasurable, right? I figured that young, my girls figured that out young. One time I caught one of mine in the bathtub with her legs up on the wall, just like I used to do when I was a little girl, letting the spigot of water hit her. And I walked in, and girls, this is another gut check. What do you think I did? Do you think I go, stop that right now, back off that, that's just not for now? Or do you think I said, hey, does that feel good? And I sat down on the toilet, which is what I did, and said, that feels incredible, doesn't it? And she's looking at me like, are you going to take my head off? Because she knows she's probably been playing out of bounds. And they're going to touch themselves, especially boys. They need to know that's the way God designed them, for that to feel good. And so we talked about the fire, and we talked about the ocean, and we talked about the context. Do you ever touch anybody else there? No, ma'am. And do you do that out in public? No, ma'am. But you know that your body works that way because God designed it that way. Isn't that incredible? You know, and then later you can say, when you start to talk as they get older about the pleasures of it, you know, that's what happens when a man and a woman, you know, read Song of Solomon, when they enjoy each other. You are the expert. But if you shame them for their bodies doing what God designed them to do, you are going to become the enemy, not the expert. So embrace that and teach them the context of those things. And you and your husband decide what that is. Pray about it. Ask about it. Roundtable it with your community. It feels good because God designed it that way. Please give him the credit. Please don't let the world take credit for that. By the time they can read, girls, all these conversations are going to come full bore because our world, through the media, is pushing all these sexually charged images and words at them. You want that sponge to be so full that by the time they do, they're ready and they know the truth. And the truth will set them free to enjoy this relationship the rest of their life. One thing I want to leave you with is always ask them the last question. Is there anything else you want to talk about? One time my daughter had gotten involved with some stuff online she shouldn't have. Actually, she had put Instagram on her phone, and she I just found out about it because her small group leaders and I were running. And they go, we just love your Instagram, Kate. You know, her Instagram account's so cute. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know it was on my own phone. That's how technologically challenged I am. And so we had to talk about that. And I said, is there anything else? You know, I brought back in my story about how I'd hidden things from my mom and, you know, regretted that later, but I so thought I was wise in my own eyes and knew what I needed, and roundtabled that talk that we had started in third grade back into that sixth grade conversation. And the question, the phrase that pays, is there anything else you want to tell me, and have you lied to me about anything? Because you're not in trouble. I want you to know I know, and I want you to know I've been there. And her dam broke, and she cried for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then she confessed all the stuff that her friends had showed her and that she had gotten tempted into looking at and become curious about. And that day was a watershed day for us because we took it to a level. But because she knew my story and I was not ashamed, I was able to say, hey, I lied to my mom. I snuck around. I read things I shouldn't read. I did, and the Lord has redeemed that. And I was able to go to the floor, or to the, what do you call it? You're able to go to the wall, whatever, with somebody with that conversation. And then it was the last question. Hey, is there anything else you want to share with me? Once she had confessed, because I hadn't taken a posture of condemnation. I'd taken a posture of compassion, you know, and take that posture with your kids. They're going to screw up. You want to give them grace when they do. There are consequences, you know, and sad to say, her conception of sex and God's design for it was tainted over that year of looking at that stuff. It can't be otherwise. When we subject ourselves, we lie to ourselves, girls, to think we can sit in front of the TV and watch shows that we tell our children they shouldn't be watching, and we're not affected. And they see that we're entertained by that, and they think that's where life is. So don't triangulate through your phone. Don't triangulate through your TV. Make this your conversation with your children. Thank you for your time. Thank you. So.